Popsy by Stephen King. Read by Joe Mantegna. Sheridan was cruising slowly down the long blank length of the shopping mall when he saw the little kid push out through the main doors under the lighted sign which read Cousin Town. It was a boy child, perhaps a big three and surely no more than five. On his face was an expression to which Sheridan had become exquisitely attuned. He was trying not to cry, but soon would. Sheridan paused for a moment, feeling the familiar soft wave of self-disgust, though every time he took a child, that feeling grew a little less urgent. The first time he hadn't slept for a week. He kept thinking about that big, greasy Turk who called himself Mr. Wizard, kept wondering what he did with the children. "They go on a boat ride, Mr. Sheridan," the Turk had told him. Only it came out, "They go on a boat ride, Mr. Sheridan." The Turk smiled. "And if you know what's good for you, you won't ask any more about it," that smile said. And it said it loud and clear, without an accent. Sheridan hadn't asked any more, but that didn't mean he hadn't kept wondering, especially afterward. Tossing and turning, wishing he had the whole thing to do over again so he could turn it around, so he could walk away from temptation. The second time had been almost as bad, the third time a little less, and by the fourth time he had almost stopped wondering about the bolt rod and what might be at the end of it for the little kids. Sheridan pulled his van into one of the handicapped parking spaces right in front of the mall. He had one of the special license plates the state gave to Crips on the back of his van. That plate was worth its weight in gold because it kept any mall security cop from getting suspicious, and those spaces were so convenient and almost always empty. "You always pretend you're not going out looking, but you always lift a Crip plate a day or two before." Never mind all that bullshit. He was in a jam, and that kid over there could solve some very big problems. He got out and walked toward the kid, who was looking around with increasing panic. Yes, Sheridan thought. He was five, all right, maybe even six. Just very frail. In the harsh fluorescent glare thrown through the glass doors, the boy looked parchment white. Not just scared, but perhaps physically ill. Sheridan reckoned it was just big fear, however. Sheridan usually recognized that look when he saw it, because he'd seen a lot of big fear in his own mirror over the last year and a half or so. The kid looked up hopefully at the people passing around him, people going into the mall, eager to buy, coming out laden with packages, their faces dazed, almost drugged with something they probably thought was satisfaction. The kid, dressed in tough-skin jeans and a Pittsburgh Penguins t-shirt, looked for help, looked for somebody to look at him and see something was wrong, looked for someone to ask the right question. "You get separated from your dad, son?" would do. "Looking for a friend." "Here I am," Sheridan thought, approaching. "Here I am, sonny. I'll be your friend." He had almost reached the kid when he saw a mall rent-a-cop ambling slowly up the concourse toward the doors. He was reaching in his pocket, probably for a pack of cigarettes. He would come out, see the boy, and there would go Sheridan's sure thing. Shit, he thought. But at least he wouldn't be seen talking to the kid when the cop came out. That would have been worse. Sheridan drew back a little and made a business of feeling in his own pockets as if to make sure he still had his keys. His glance flicked from the boy to the security cop and back to the boy. The boy had started to cry. Not all-out bawling, not yet, but great big tears that looked pinkish in the reflected glow of the red Cousin Town sign as they tracked down his smooth cheeks. The girl in the information booth flagged down the cop and said something to him. She was pretty, dark-haired, about 25. He was sandy blonde with a mustache. As the cop leaned on his elbows, smiling at her, Sheridan thought they looked like the cigarette ads you saw on the backs of magazines. Salem Spirit, Light My Lucky. He was dying out here, and they were in there making chit-chat. What you doing after work? You want to go and get a drink at that new place and blah, blah, blah. Now she was also batting her eyes at him. How cute. Sheridan abruptly decided to take the chance. The kid's chest was hitching, and as soon as he started to bawl out loud, someone would notice him. Sheridan didn't like moving in with a cop less than 60 feet away. But if he didn't cover his markers at Mr. Reggie's within the next 24 hours, he thought a couple of very large men would pay him a visit and perform impromptu surgery on his arms, adding several elbow bends to each. He walked up to the kid, a big man dressed in an ordinary Van Heusen shirt and khaki pants, a man with a broad, ordinary face that looked kind at first glance. He bent over the little boy, hands on his legs, just above the knees, and the boy turned his pale, scared face up to Sheridan's. His eyes were as green as emeralds, their color accentuated by the light-reflecting tears that washed them. "You get separated from your dad, son?" Sheridan asked.
"My popsy," the kid said, wiping his eyes. I can't find my popsy."
Now the kid did begin to sob, and a woman headed in glanced around with some vague concern. "It's all right," Sheridan said to her, and she went on. Sheridan put a comforting arm around the boy's shoulders and drew him a little to the right, in the direction of the van. Then he looked back inside. The rent-a-cop had his face right down next to the information girl's now. Looked like maybe more than that little girl's lucky was going to get lit tonight. Sheridan relaxed. At this point, there could be a stick-up going on at the bank just up the concourse, and the cop wouldn't notice a thing. This was starting to look like a cinch.
"I want my popsy,"
the boy wept. "Sure you do. Of course you do," Sheridan said. "And we're going to find him. Don't you worry." He drew him a little more to the right. The boy looked up at him, suddenly hopeful.
"Can you? Can you, mister?"
"Sure," Sheridan said, and grinned heartily. "Finding lost popsies? Well, you might say, it's kind of a specialty of mine."
"It is?"
The kid actually smiled a little, although his eyes were still leaking. "It sure is," Sheridan said, glancing inside again to make sure the cop, whom he could now barely see, and who would barely be able to see Sheridan and the boy should he happen to look up, was still enthralled. He was. "What was your popsy wearing, son?"
"He was wearing his suit," the boy said. "He almost always wears his suit. I only saw him once in jeans."
He spoke as if Sheridan should know all these things about his popsy. "I bet it was a black suit," Sheridan said. The boy's eyes lit up.
"You saw him? Where?"
He started eagerly back toward the doors, tears forgotten, and Sheridan had to restrain himself from grabbing the pale-faced little brat right then and there. That type of thing was no good. Couldn't cause a scene. Couldn't do anything people would remember later. Had to get him in the van. The van had sun-filter glass everywhere except in the windshield. It was almost impossible to see inside unless you had your face smashed right up against it. Had to get him in the van first. He touched the boy on the arm. "I didn't see him inside, son. I saw him right over there." He pointed across the huge parking lot with its endless platoons of cars. There was an access road at the far end of it, and beyond that were the double yellow arches of McDonald's.
"Why would Popsy go over there?" the boy asked, as if either Sheridan or Popsy, or maybe both of them, had gone utterly mad.
"I don't know," Sheridan said. His mind was working fast, clicking along like an express train, as it always did when it got right down to the point where you had to stop shitting and either do it right or fuck it up righteously. Popsy. Not Dad or Daddy, but Popsy. The kid had corrected him on it. Maybe Popsy meant Granddad, Sheridan decided. But I'm pretty sure that was him. Older guy in a black suit, white hair, green tie.
"Popsy had his blue tie on," the boy said. "He knows I like it the best."
"Yeah, it could have been blue," Sheridan said. "Under these lights, who can tell? Come on, hop in the van. I'll run you over there to him."
Are you sure it was Popsy? Because I don't know why he'd go to a place where they...
Sheridan shrugged. Look, kid, if you're sure that wasn't him, maybe you better look for him on your own. You might even find him. And he started brusquely away, heading back toward the van. The kid wasn't biting. He thought about going back, trying again, but it had already gone on too long. You either kept observable contact to a minimum, or you were asking for 20 years in Hammerton Bay. He'd better go on to another mall. Scotterville, maybe, or...
Wait, mister!
It was the kid, with panic in his voice. There was the light thud of running sneakers.
Wait up! I told him I was thirsty. He must have thought he had to go way over there to get me a drink. Wait!
Sheridan turned around, smiling. I wasn't really going to leave you anyway, son. He led the boy to the van, which was 4 years old and painted a nondescript blue. He opened the door and smiled at the kid, who looked up at him doubtfully, his green eyes swimming in that pallid little face, as huge as the eyes of a waif in a velvet painting, the kind they advertised in the cheap weekly tabloids like the National Enquirer and Inside View. "Step into my parlor, little buddy," Sheridan said, and produced a grin which looked almost entirely natural. It was really sort of creepy how good he'd gotten at this. The kid did, and although he didn't know it, his ass belonged to Briggs Sheridan the minute the passenger door swung shut. There was only one problem in his life. It wasn't Broad's, although he liked to hear the swish of a skirt or feel the smooth smoke of silken hose as well as any man. And it wasn't booze, although he had been known to take a drink or three of an evening. Sheridan's problem, his fatal flaw, you might even say, was cards. Any kind of cards, as long as it was the kind of game where wagers were allowed. He had lost jobs, credit cards, the home his mother had left him. He had never, at least so far, been in jail. But the first time he got in trouble with Mr. Reggie, he'd thought jail would be a rest cure by comparison. He had gone a little crazy that night. It was better, he had found, when you lost right away. When you lost right away, you got discouraged, went home, watched Letterman on the tube, and then went to sleep. When you won a little bit at first, you chased. Sheridan had chased that night and had ended up owing $17,000. He could hardly believe it. He went home dazed, almost elated by the enormity of it. He kept telling himself in the car on the way home that he owed Mr. Reggie not 700, not 7,000, but 17,000 Iron Men. Every time he tried to think about it, he giggled and turned up the volume on the radio. But he wasn't giggling the next night, when the two gorillas, the ones who would make sure his arms bent in all sorts of new and interesting ways if he didn't pay up, brought him into Mr. Reggie's office.
"I'll pay," Sheridan began babbling at once. "I'll pay. Listen, it's no problem. Couple of days, a week at the most. 2 weeks at the outside."
"You bore me, Sheridan," Mr. Reggie said. Shut up. If I give you a week, don't you think I know what you'll do? You'll tap a friend for a couple of hundred if you've got a friend left to tap. If you can't find a friend, you'll hit a liquor store, if you've got the guts. I doubt if you do, but anything is possible."
Mr. Reggie leaned forward, propped his chin on his hands, and smiled. He smelled of Ted Lapidus cologne.
"And if you do come up with $200, what will you do with it?"
Give it to you, Sheridan had babbled.
By then he was very close to tears.
I'll give it to you, right away.
"No, you won't," Mr. Reggie said. "You'll take it to the track and try to make it grow. What you'll give me is a bunch of shitty excuses. You're in over your head this time, my friend. Way over your head."
Sheridan could hold back the tears no longer. He began to blubber.
"These guys could put you in the hospital for a long time," Mr. Reggie said reflectively. "You would have a tube in each arm and another one coming out of your nose."
Sheridan began to blubber louder.
"I'll give you this much,"
Mr. Reggie said, and pushed the folded sheet of paper across his desk to Sheridan.
You might get along with this guy. He calls himself Mr. Wizard, but he's a shitbag just like you. Now get out of here. I'm gonna have you back in here in a week, though, and I'll have your markers on this desk. You either buy them back, or I'm gonna have my friends tool up on you. And like Booker T says, once they start, they do it until they're satisfied.
The Turk's real name was written on the folded sheet of paper. Sheridan went to see him and heard about the kids and the Buttrods. Mr. Wizard also named a figure which was a fairish bit larger than the markers Mr. Reggie was holding. That was when Sheridan started cruising the malls. He pulled out of the Cousin Town Mall's main parking lot, looked for traffic, then drove across the access road and into the McDonald's in lane. The kid was sitting all the way forward on the passenger seat, hands on the knees of his tough skins, eyes agonizingly alert. Sheridan drove toward the building, swung wide to avoid the drive-through lane, and kept on going.
"Why are you going around the back?" the kid asked.
"You have to go around to the other door," Sheridan said. "Keep your shirt on, kid. I think I saw him in there."
"You did? You really did?"
"I'm pretty sure, yeah." Sublime relief washed over the kid's face, and for a moment Sheridan felt sorry for him. Hell, he wasn't a monster or a maniac, for Christ's sake. But his markers had gotten a little deeper each time, and that bastard Mr. Reggie had no compunctions at all about letting him hang himself. It wasn't 17,000 this time, or 20,000, or even 25,000. This time it was 35 grand, a whole damn marching battalion of Iron Men, if he didn't want a few new sets of elbows by next Saturday. He stopped in the back by the trash compactor. Nobody was parked back here. Good. There was an elasticized pouch on the side of the door for maps and things. Sheridan reached into it with his left hand and brought out a pair of blued steel Krieg handcuffs. The loop jaws were open.
"Why are we stopping here, mister?" the kid asked.
The fear was back in his voice, but the quality of it had changed. He had suddenly realized that maybe getting separated from good old Popsy in the busy mall wasn't the worst thing that could happen to him after all. "We're not really," Sheridan said easily. He had learned the second time he'd done this that you didn't want to underestimate even a 6-year-old once he had his wind up. The second kid had kicked him in the balls and had damn near gotten away. "I just remembered I forgot to put my glasses on when I started driving. I could lose my license. They're in that glasses case on the floor there. They slid over to your side. Hand them to me, would you?" The kid bent over to get the glasses case, which was empty. Sheridan leaned over and snapped one of the cuffs on the kid's reaching hand as neat as you please. And then the trouble started. Hadn't he just been thinking it was a bad mistake to underestimate even a 6-year-old? The brat fought like a timber wolf pup, twisting with a powerful muscularity Sheridan would not have credited had he not been experiencing it. He bucked and fought and lunged for the door, panting and uttering weird, bird-like cries. He got the handle. The door swung open, but no dome light came on. Sheridan had broken it after that second outing. Sheridan got the kid by the round collar of his penguin's t-shirt and hauled him back in. He tried to clamp the other cuff on the special strut beside the passenger seat and missed. The kid bit his hand, twice, bringing blood. God, his teeth were like razors. The pain went deep and sent a steely ache all the way up his arm. He punched the kid in the mouth. The kid fell back into the seat, dazed, Sheridan's blood on his lips and chin and dripping onto the ribbed neck of the t-shirt. Sheridan locked the other cuff onto the strut and then fell back into his own seat, sucking the back of his right hand. The pain was really bad. He pulled his hand away from his mouth and looked at it in the weak glow of the dash lights. 2 shallow, ragged tears, each maybe 2 inches long, ran up toward his wrist from just above the knuckles. Blood pulsed in weak little rills. Still, he felt no urge to pop the kid again,
and that had nothing to do with damaging the Turk's merchandise, in spite of the almost fussy way the Turk had warned him against that.
"Damage the goods and you damage the value," the Turk had said in his greasy accent.
No, he didn't blame the kid for fighting. He would have done the same. He would have to disinfect the wound as soon as he could, though. Might even have to have a shot. He had read somewhere that human bites were the worst kind. Still, he couldn't help but admire the kid's guts. He dropped the transmission into drive and pulled around the hamburger stand, past the drive-thru window, and back onto the access road. He turned left. The Turk had a big ranch-style house in Toluda Heights, on the edge of the city. Sheridan would go there by secondary roads, just to be safe. 30 miles, maybe 45 minutes, maybe an hour. He passed a sign which read, "Thank you for shopping the beautiful Cousin Town Mall," turned left, and let the van creep up to a perfectly legal 40 miles an hour. He fished a handkerchief out of his back pocket, folded it over the back of his right hand, and concentrated on following his headlights to the 40 grand the Turk had promised for a boy child.
"You'll be sorry," the kid said.
Sheridan looked impatiently around at him, pulled from a dream in which he had just won 20 straight hands and had Mr. Reggie groveling at his feet for a change, sweating bullets and begging him to stop. What did he want to do, break him? The kid was crying again, and his tears still had that odd pinkish cast, even though they were now well away from the bright lights of the mall. Sheridan wondered for the first time if the kid might have some sort of communicable disease. He supposed it was a little late to start worrying about such things, so he put it out of his mind.
"When my Popsy finds you, you'll be sorry,"
the kid elaborated. "Yeah," Sheridan said, and lit a cigarette. He turned off State Road 28 and onto an unmarked stretch of two-lane blacktop. There was a long, marshy area on the left, unbroken woods on the right. The kid pulled at the handcuffs and made a sobbing noise. "Quit it. Won't do you any good." Nevertheless, the kid pulled again, and this time there was a groaning, protesting sound Sheridan didn't like at all. He looked around and was amazed to see that the metal strut on the side of the seat, a strut he had welded in place himself, was twisted out of shape. "Shit," he thought. "He's got teeth like razors, and now I find out he's also strong as a fucking ox. If this is what he's like when he's sick, God forbid I should have grabbed him on a day when he was feeling well." He pulled over onto the soft shoulder and said, "Stop it."
"I won't."
The kid yanked at the handcuff again, and Sheridan saw the metal strut bend a little more. Christ, how could any kid do that? "It's panic," he answered himself. "That's how he can do it." But none of the others had been able to do it, and many of them had been a lot more terrified than this kid by this stage of the game. He opened the glove compartment in the center of the dash. He brought out a hypodermic needle. The Turk had given it to him and cautioned him not to use it unless he absolutely had to. "Drugs," the Turk said, pronouncing it drugs, "could damage the merchandise. See this?" The kid gave the hypo a glimmering sideways glance and nodded. "You want me to use it?" The kid shook his head at once. Strong or not, he had any kid's instant terror of the needle, Sheridan was happy to see. "That's very smart. It would put out your lights." He paused. He didn't want to say it. Hell, he was a nice guy, really, when he didn't have his ass in a sling. But he had to. "Might even kill you." The kid stared at him, lips trembling, cheeks papery with fear. "You stop yanking the cuff, I put away the needle. Deal?"
"Deal,"
the kid whispered. "You promise?"
"Yes."
The kid lifted his lip, showing white teeth. One of them was spotted with Sheridan's blood. "You promise on your mother's name?"
"I never had a mother."
"Shit," Sheridan said, disgusted, and got the van rolling again. He moved a little faster now, and not only because he was finally off the main road. The kid was a spook. Sheridan wanted to turn him over to the Turk, get his money, and split.
My Popsy's really strong, mister.
Yeah? Sheridan asked and thought, I bet he is, kid. Only guy in the old folks' home who can bench press his own truss, right?
He'll find me.
Uh-huh.
He can smell me.
Sheridan believed it. He could smell the kid. That fear had an odor was something he had learned on his previous expeditions. But this was unreal. The kid smelled like a mixture of sweat, mud, and slowly cooking battery acid. Sheridan was becoming more and more sure that something was seriously wrong with the kid. But soon that would be Mr. Wizard's problem, not his. And caveat emptor, as those old fellas in the togas used to say, caveat fucking emptor. Sheridan cracked his window. On the left, the marsh went on and on. Broken slivers of moonlight glimmered in the stagnant water.
Popsy can fly.
Yeah, Sheridan said. After a couple of bottles of nitrate, I bet he flies like a son of a bitch an eagle.
Popsy.
Enough of the Popsy shit, kid. Okay? The kid shut up. 4 miles farther on, the marsh on the left broadened into a wide, empty pond. Sheridan made a turn onto a stretch of hard-pan dirt that skirted the pond's north side. 5 miles west of here, he would turn right onto Highway 41, and from there, it would be a straight shot into Toluda Heights. He glanced toward the pond, a flat silver sheet in the moonlight. And then the moonlight was gone, blotted out. Overhead, there was a flapping sound, like big sheets on a clothesline.
Popsy!
The kid cried. Shut up! It was only a bird. But suddenly he was spooked, very spooked. He looked at the kid. The kid's lip was drawn back from his teeth again. His teeth were very white, very big. No, not big. Big wasn't the right word. Long was the right word. Especially the two at the top, at each side. The, what did you call them? The canines. His mind suddenly started to fly again, clicking along as if he were on speed.
I told him I was thirsty. Why would Popsy go to a place where they...
Eat? Was he gonna say eat?
He'll find me. He can smell me. Popsy can fly.
Something landed on the roof of the van with a heavy, clumsy thump.
Popsy!
The kid screamed again, almost delirious with delight. And suddenly, Sheridan could not see the road anymore. A huge, membranous wing, pulsing with veins, covered the windshield from side to side.
Popsy can fly!
Sheridan screamed and jumped on the brake, hoping to tumble the thing on the roof off the front. There was that groaning, protesting sound of metal under stress from his right again, this time followed by a short, bitter snap. A moment later, the kid's fingers were clawing into his face, pulling open his cheek.
He stole me, Popsy!
The kid was screeching at the roof of the van in that bird-like voice.
He stole me! He stole me! The bad man stole me!
You don't understand, kid, Sheridan thought. He groped for the hypo and found it. I'm not a bad guy. I just got in a jam. Then a hand, more like a talon than a real hand, smashed through the side window and ripped the hypo from Sheridan's grasp, along with two of his fingers. A moment later, Popsy peeled the entire driver's side door out of its frame, the hinges now bright twists of meaningless metal. Sheridan saw a billowing cape, black on the outside, lined with red silk on the inside, and the creature's tie, and although it was actually a cravat, it was blue all right, just as the boy had said. Popsy yanked Sheridan out of the car, talons sinking through his jacket and shirt and deep into the meat of his shoulders. Popsy's green eyes suddenly turned as red as blood roses.
We came to the mall because my grandson wanted some Transformer figures, Popsy whispered. And his breath was like fly-blown meat. The ones they show on TV. All the children want them. You should have left him alone. You should have left us alone.
Sheridan was shaken like a rag doll. He shrieked and was shaken again. He heard Popsy asking solicitously if the kid was still thirsty. Heard the kid saying, "Yes, very." The bad man had scared him, and his throat was so dry. He saw Popsy's thumbnail for just a second before it disappeared under the shelf of his chin, the nail ragged and thick. His throat was cut with that nail before he realized what was happening, and the last things he saw before his sight dimmed to black were the kid cupping his hands to catch the flow, the way Sheridan himself had cupped his hands under the backyard faucet for a drink on a hot summer day when he was a kid. And Popsy, stroking the boy's hair gently with grandfatherly love.